Mr. President, we cannot afford a hypersonic missile gap.
It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 21st day of October 2021, 10-21-21. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. This is, that's, of course, where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which the program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all times. In between and the Great Globe Round. Hi, I'm Robin. If you should happen to pop in right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Otto, Deschott, and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, definitely does not fold space in the rain because it makes the man cave sound like, it sounds like jackhammers on the metal roof. And you will also be moderated, and he is capably assisted by pitch hit utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. So, hail, hail, the gang's all here. Yes. Yes, indeed. And we find ourselves here at with Thorn in the Side Thursday, and every program here at The Horn begins... begins with gratitude, and that means we send thanks out to our 21st day of the month subscribers. So consequently, we say thank you to Harold, the president and CEO of Sostris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Hi, Harold. Thank you. And Harold finds himself being the only subscriber on the 21st day of the month. So thank you for making sure that that is not a that's not a blank day, Harold. Thank you so very much indeed. And let's see, where does that leave us relative to fundraising? We are at $1,145 to go. To come up even with this week. So what does that mean? That means, let's see, Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday. Yeah. And we have funded $55 worth of Monday. So, well, if we could knock out Monday, we will still stay below that that worst ever fundraising hole that we had last week. You know, if we do more than Monday, we could actually maybe have a less than $1,000 fundraising hole. And just a reminder, so that, because I know not everybody doesn't listen to every program. Some people do. And I thank you so much if you do. That's so kind. Well, if you're keeping track, there will be a Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. There will be a Friday on the Front Porch next Friday. And Friday, a week from tomorrow, will be the final regular broadcast for this program until I'm at least a little bit healed up post-op. We are leaving here on the Monday, the 1st of November, and going down and setting up a month's worth, more than a month, setting up housekeeping, Agnes and I. And the only place there should be an interruption in the program will be Wednesday of next week, the 27th. I have an afternoon appointment in Huntington that requires my attention, and I will have to go, and it's, because it's afternoon, there's just no way to get done with the appointment, which will be every bit of an hour to an hour and a half, and then get back here in time to be on there, because it's a good 2 hour plus drive. Okay. So that's the only program note of note that I can think of at this point in time. So that's it, and it is desperately important that we finish and be completely funded so that I can pay a whole raft of bills heading downhill into the great, vast, not-on-air space of early November, and maybe like 3 weeks of November. Because right now the plan is, and I'm not trying to put anything in anybody's face. You don't have to think about any gory things. But just in terms of the reality of things, it is highly unlikely. It is rock solid certain that there will be no broadcast on the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, and probably 15th and 16th of November. And that's why I'm talking to someone about covering in my absence. Now, after the 16th, which will be one week post-op, then still pretty sketchy. But I'm hoping that I'll maybe be able to be back on the air in some capacity by like the 15th of November. And that's putting a lot of pressure on myself to get that done. Because I would like for there to still, and by the way, we're going to celebrate our 16th on-air anniversary tomorrow. And it does blow my mind that this has been going on for 16 years. You know, bring your party hats and your party favors and your noisemakers and everything to Friday on the Front. I'm not kidding. It'll just be another program. But it just absolutely astonishes me that we've managed to keep this thing going for 16 years. Jesus, Brother Deacon Asa, give a girl a break. You can always do a special morning show for next Wednesday. What do you think? I'm thinking maybe we'll be lucky if we get one photograph of me propped up in, because I think the spinal will still be wearing off at that point in time. It's going to be, And like I said, I don't want anybody having to think about anything creepy or gory or gross or ooky or anything like that. But I'm kind of odd. Well, we knew that, didn't we? I'm sort of odd. And I was thinking yesterday, and this has something to do with the way they train your brain when they take it out on the first day of the first year of law school, and they sort of run it through the legematic and put it back together again 3 years later. But I like to know how things work. What, not like taking apart a carburetor. I'm not interested in those. But the workings of the human body are fascinating to me. And I know sort of intellectually what they're going to do, but I found a video from Mount Sinai Hospital in New York of the procedure I'm having done being done. Hint, probably not the best thing in the world to watch that long about midnight before you fall asleep. Just no. But at least I know what's going on, and now I understand better why it's going to hurt a lot. And the people with more fragile and delicate sensibilities probably don't even want to think about that because, well, it makes them squirm a lot. But I now have a real good working understanding for why I'm going to be using that donut cushion. Yeah. Not saying. Just saying. Billable Rick says, listening to every program, I listen irreligiously to every program that you do. Note to Steve from New York. While I was at the charity golf tournament last Friday, I heard what you said about me. Give yourself a gnar. He sees you when you're sleeping. He hears when you're awake. Now, no singing. We got a $1,145 fundraising hold, damn it. Steve says, I'm pretty sure I saw that video. I had the same reaction. It's a three-parter, Steve. There's three segments of the process. And I understand that because, you know, they speeded it up. And so there are these little tiny surgical instruments. They're going really, really fast with really, really fast little fingers. And what it encompasses is about 8 hours of time. And then the robot part was in there, and the robot was working. I'm not supposed to make that noise. But nonetheless, I didn't sleep real well, but I'm not scared. I'm not nervous. I'm eager, in fact. But it does explain why maybe the insurance company is wrong about that, you know, we'll pay for 2 days in the hospital. Because one of the things they say on the video is, and 5 days later in the hospital. So as far as I can tell, they're just going to play it by ear. And I guess on day three, they're going to call the insurance company and go, nope, she can't go home yet. Mm-mm. No, the glue's not dry. Right. Yeah, so we will we'll say that's a no, Brother Deacon Asa, to the special morning show for next Wednesday. No. Not at all. And we are often started. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly, Ralphs. We are down to 11:29 to go to, well. So I guess we got 2:29 to go to get caught up and fully fund last Monday. Okay, so Steve didn't see that video. It's behind, and the thing is, it's behind a paywall ordinarily, but they turned it loose and turned the paywall off for like 30 days, so that's why I didn't know where we were in the 30-day process. That's why I ran out and took a look at it. Steve said, perhaps I didn't see that video, but rest assured, I saw at least a video. Honestly, my thought was this. Well, they can do that. Yeah, they can do that. And there's a whole team involved. It's just really fascinating. So, anyway, don't necessarily go looking for it. Let's see, where do... Lately, we've been noticing that there are a number of situations that lend themselves to back references to Dr. Strangelove. And I trust that most of the community is familiar with that film. You remember when they start talking about how humanity is going to, because when the doomsday device goes off, the whole planet's going to nuke itself because of the computers and the robots and it. And Dr. Strangelove tells them that, you know, that people can live in mine shafts and animals can be bred and slaughtered. Yes, Mr. President, and only the most desirable women will enter the mine shafts. They'll never know what... Right. So, there's news all over my feed today. They've been taught, you know, China has tested a hypersonic missile, and the Russians are working on a hypersonic missile. And then we find out via, I think it was Reuters, that the brand new highfalutin hypersonic missile that the United States is working on, yeah, it was Reuters. Well, China's been bragging about theirs, and you know, it's, you know how it is with these boys. It's, oh, mine's bigger. Oh, mine's faster. Oh, mine's harder. But nonetheless, stop that. The United States is testing a hypersonic weapon too, and they had a setback today because the booster rocket that was carrying the hypersonic missile, well, it flopped. Nothing. Bupkis. They were looking to, they were looking to sort of make, pass a milestone, or a kidney stone, I'm not sure which, in the attempt to develop this hypersonic weapon. So on this past Wednesday, 2 days ago, yesterday, the Navy and the Army each tested a component of the hypersonic missile prototype. That was Wednesday, and they said that the test was successful insofar as it demonstrated advanced hypersonic technologies, capabilities, and prototype systems in a realistic operating environment. That was some dude at the Pentagon. And, of course, yesterday, we had President Joe Biden, and he was talking about how, China already has their hypersonic missile, and they've tested a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile. And these are glide weapons, and they're really fast. They can travel to their targets at about almost 4,000 miles an hour, some five times the, or more than five times the speed of sound. And the theory is that they're indefensible. Of course, there's always the better mousetrap theory. You know, you build a better mousetrap, you get a better, you wind up with a better, a different kind of mice. You build a better lock, you get a better class of burglar. Oh, look, it's an arms race. Sure. And again, I catch myself when I see myself entering the Alex Jones neighborhood. And so I'm not saying this is how it is, but I've been conditioned to be this way over a lot of years. And given that we're engaging in a conversation nationwide about whether mamas and daddies should continue to have to come near bankrupting themselves for child care, or whether mamas and daddies, when there's a newborn, and more mamas and daddies, when there's a newborn, whether they should have to turn the care of the little one over to somebody besides the mama, the daddy, or the mama, right? Because we're talking about maternity and paternity leave. We're talking about child care tax credits. And, of course, everybody's least favorite senator in the United States, and I really think he probably is. If you had the polling data, you would find out that the whole country hates Joe Manchin. Sorry, I'm so tired of this. This is more tiresome than the Dave Chappelle shit. But everybody hates Joe Manchin more than any other senator in the United States. I don't know, maybe Moscow Mitch would come close. But at this point in time, he's like unto the, well, Judas in Dante's Inferno and the lowest level of hell is reserved for those who betray. And of course, Joe Manchin is a Judas, plain and simple. The thing is, the only thing about that is that he's not newly a Judas. He's been one all along. He represents a state that desperately needs things like a child care tax credit and paid maternity and paternity leave, parental leave. I don't know why I keep using the binary on that. You can learn your way around this stuff. And he wants there to be means testing. I saw where the wag for the New Yorker, Andy Borowitz, said posted a headline that said, Americans demand a work requirement of Joe Manchin. And, of course, Joe Manchin opposes all these things. I don't want us to become an entitlement society. He doesn't even understand. Please. All these people expending all this ink, all these pixels, trying to explain. Joe Manchin doesn't know the meaning of entitlement. Even ironically, Joe Manchin is the queen of entitlement. Joe Manchin has not worked hard all his life. Joe Manchin was handed a pile of money to make another pile of money. We went over this yesterday evening. Among other things, Randy Radar says, wait until they look at Joe Manchin's tax returns. Oh, they've seen him. I mean, and we've seen his financial disclosures, too. That's how we know how much money he makes as a coal broker. Sorry, not yelling at you, Randy. But within the universe of the discussion we're having about the needs of actual, no kidding, real working American families, the fact that all this news about hypersonic weapons and we're losing the hypersonic weapons race and we're just going to be naked and afraid and alone to the inscrutable Chinese and the Ruskies. Well, you'll forgive me if that just seems, yes, it's a little Alex Jonesy, but you'll forgive me if that seems just a little bit too convenient. You know, I just don't think that we need to be talking about giveaway programs for those worthless little children and babies when we've got a hypersonic missile program that we've got to fund because we've got to close that hypersonic missile gap. See how it works? Now, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But it seems like every time we want something to make life cushy or provide a hammock for the lazy proles to lounge in the few hours of the day that they're not giving away to corporate America or some employer in exchange for a pittance. More, please. It just seems like every time we try to have that conversation, there's something that goes boom that we need to spend money on instead. You have to think that people at the Pentagon need child care too. You have to think that people at the Pentagon need parental leave, paid parental leave as well. Or then again, maybe they already have those things through General Rocketry or Amalgamated Dynamics. And we just can't have the American people dictating that the government dictating that the American people just all get that, because then where would be the fun in working on the hypersonic missile program for Consolidated Widget? And the description of these things. Well, I mean, I'd want a country full of these, wouldn't you? Glide bodies are different from their air-breathing hypersonic weapon cousins, which use scramjet engine technology and the vehicle's high speed to forcibly compress incoming air before combustion to enable sustained flight at hypersonic speeds. An air-breathing hypersonic weapon was successfully tested in September. Companies such as Lockheed Martin and Raytheon Technologies are working to develop the hypersonic weapon capability for the United States. I'm so old I can remember when Dennis Kucinich said when he was running for president in 2004 that if he was elected president of the United States, he would create a Department of Peace. Oh, and all the Americans went, I tell you what, that silly liberal. Did you know he done see the UFO? Yeah, he's going to have a Department of Peace. That silly man. Who wants peace? But is it such a crazy notion? Is it? So the Chinese have a hypersonic weapon. Big bad Vladdy Daddy says they've got a hypersonic weapon over in Mother Russia. And so the United States, in the classic case of, well, if China and Russia jumped off a bridge, would you jump off too? Fuck yes we would. Wait a minute, they canceled Bridge Day, goddammit. On the other hand, if you had a Department of Peace and you had a nascent and emerging arms race over hypersonic weapons that could probably erase most of the life forms except the cockroaches on this planet for ever, maybe you'd want to get your Secretary of Peace involved and have them sit down with some counterpart over in Mother Russia or the People's Republic of China or both, and maybe you could come up with a treaty saying, let's get rid of all the weapons that could eliminate life on planet Earth. Because really, at this point, they seem kind of superfluous, don't they? Because the weapons, we've already got enough nuclear, really, conventional nuclear weapons. Used to be there were conventional weapons and nuclear weapons, but now with the hypersonic missile technology, there's conventional nuclear weapons. It's going to really suck when somebody comes up with the weirding module, and then the Kwisatz Haderach comes along and doesn't even need that to use the voice of command. Well, here we are. But maybe, just maybe, it might be beneficial to do something like that. Because the bottom line, as we've learned for the last year and a half plus, is that Mother Nature is doing a pretty darn fine job of trying to figure out a way to shed the virus that is humanity from the face of the earth. And one gets the idea that she's going to keep trying. Or maybe that's not what the COVID-19 virus is. Certainly is what climate change is. Who needs hypersonic nuclear weapons when we can, when people like Joe Manchin just want to keep on burning fossil fuels and we won't have... Well, I'm sure Joe thinks that he and his are going to live under their bubble. And they'll have all kinds of magnificent toys and gizmos under the bubble. There'll be entire cities under bubbles. And there'll be proles like us who live outside the bubble. But we get to commute and work for them inside the bubble. We just have to leave at the end of every day and catch the maglev bullet train back out into the dystopian wasteland. And everything will be printed on 3D printers, and you won't need that many workers anyway. Yeah, well, okay, I know. Oh, dear Robin, Stephen, New York says, you just want an entitlement society. By the way, I'm thinking being a senator should have a work requirement. Hey, you know what? It's hard work being a senator. Don't you remember years back when it was, I think, Bob Graham of Florida quit being, and he was a Democrat from Florida. He quit being a senator because he said it's no fun anymore. It used to be fun to be a senator, but now I spend all my time, Bob Graham said, just fundraising. Every minute that I'm not being a senator, I'm on the phone saying, hey, could you gimme. Because I got to run an election in Florida, and that's an expensive proposition. I got to have enough money to give to the media consortiums who hate me to run my ads so that I can beat the guy that they like who's also giving them money. Like, that almost seems like a racket. Nah, it couldn't be. This is the greatest system of government in the history of the world on earth today in the universe forever under God. Amen. Sort of hard to evade that, though, isn't it? And, you know, I asked a question yesterday. We were talking about how they just take stuff that Nitwit Nero really did and they repurpose it and they slap it on a meme about Joe Biden. Enter the Washington Examiner. God, this thing is such a vile little fish wrap. I'm looking at the story now, and it's got a picture of Joe Biden with it. Copyright Susan Walsh of the Associated Press. And Joe Biden's sitting there, he's got his teeth ground, clenched together, and he's looking daggers out of his eyes, and he's got his pointing index finger, and he's pointing, and just looks really mean and shitty. Headline, Biden serves up word salad, appearing to say he rode Amtrak as vice president for 36 years. See, that just proves he's insane. He's got the old timers. That's what he's got, the old timers. Here's what he said. His latest word salad came as Biden delivered an address in Scranton, Pennsylvania. It's over the ocean to Scranton, Pennsylvania? Sorry. There's a line for everything in the in-laws. There really is. I commuted every single day for 36 years as Vice President of the United States after my wife and daughter were killed. I went home to see my family, never stopped. And the Washington Examiner picked that up from townhall.com, which is, of course, a filthy right-wing sewer. There's a reason within the English language that somewhere in time, and I admit I did not do the research to find out exactly when it started happening, we invented the comma. Because a comma, and suddenly that's not word salad. It wasn't word salad to begin with.
I'd ride every day. I commuted every single day for 36 years as Vice President of the United States. After my wife and daughter were killed, I went home to see my family, never stopped.
See, that just proves he done got the old timers. God almighty. On the other hand, I commuted, talking about Amtrak, every single day for 36 years, comma, as Vice President of the United States, comma, after my wife and daughter were killed, comma, I went home to see my family, comma, never stopped. Now, curiously, they decided to add the comma after killed and family, and then comma quotation mark Biden said. I would say that that is bad faith transcription. He didn't lie. He really, really, really did commute from Delaware to Washington, D.C. every single day for 36 years. He also commuted every single day on Amtrak as Vice President of the United States. After his wife and his daughter were killed, he commuted on Amtrak every single day because it was important to him as a single dad. Early on, before he married Dr. Biden. It was critically important that he get home to his kids. And there he was making senator money. So because he was making senator money, he could afford to get on Amtrak and take that ride all the way from D.C. to Delaware. But he's a fundamentally decent man. And he wanted badly to be in his children's lives. Because in particular, their mother wasn't. Now, I'm sure that dickhead, Matt Walsh, that we had the clip from last night, would say that, well, you know, dad doesn't need to be doing that. That's the job of a mother. Maybe God shouldn't have killed the mama. But, you know, if God killed the mama, I know in my heart of hearts that under church teaching, God had a reason for killing mama. These fuckers. These rotten little pricks. You get a comma after wife and daughter were killed. You get a comma after I went home to see my family. But no, I commuted every single day for 36 years as Vice President of the United States because, see there, Joe Biden thinks he was Vice President for 36 years. How old would that make Barack Obama, 112, and him, 142? He's done lost his shit. Meanwhile, the maggots blithely sat there and watched Nitwit Nero hang on for dear life to anybody within reach anytime he would try to walk down a ramp or stairs or along a flat surface on the colonnade outside the Rose Garden at the White House. This is just so. But that's where this stuff comes from. I'm sure it's all over the country by now, on the same websites of, or on the same Facebook pages, social media pages of people who will, in fairly short order, show up accepting their Herman Cain Award over at Reddit. It's bad faith. It's also not at all surprising. But when I saw that story pop up, I knew it sort of needed a moment. Because when we ask questions here, the universe often delivers them. This is devilish stuff. Commas? We're down to dummying things up with comma holding back commas. They really are handy little son of a guns. If you look at ancient Roman texts, you'll see that not only, if you're a classic scholar, you've really got to do your homework, because when you get an ancient text, not only did the Romans not have commas or quotation marks or much of anything in the way of punctuation, hell, they didn't even leave a space between words. Because writing with a stylus on either a wax tablet or on parchment or on papyrus is some pretty laborious business. And taking time for, well, I guess it just didn't occur to them. But eventually, some eager young proto-grammarian came up with punctuation marks. And it just makes life so much better for those who practice the art of word knowing. And since there's a term out there called the Oxford comma, I wouldn't be surprised to find out that the various punctuation marks in English were developed by some eager young scholar there at Oxford. There in Washington, D.C., they have the Folger, just like the coffee, Shakespeare Library. And I think they've even got one of the folios. Be interesting to see if Shakespeare was in the punctuation business. But you know who's not? Or in the selective punctuation business? Town Hall, Washington Examiner. Because this is, after all, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Here's another Washington Examiner headline, because I just kind of had a Washington Examiner moment. National Institutes of Health, abbreviated to NIH. NIH admits Fauci lied about funding Wuhan gain-of-function experiments. Guess what? It's a lie. To be generous, it's at least spin. Now, what is it that constitutes this dreadful and guilt-proving lie? Well, the Washington Examiner has some eager young scribe by the name of Tiana Lowe, who wrote in a letter, you can almost hear the ominous chords, can't you? In a letter to Kentucky Republican James Comer, the ranking member of the House Oversight Committee, that means James Comer from Kentucky Stan is a Republican and could not be trusted with the truth, let alone the carcass of a runover skunk. Lawrence A. Tabak of the NIH admitted that, quote, out of an abundance of caution, comma, close quote, and that's the quote, out of an abundance of caution. And then eager young ink-stained wretch Tiana Lowe goes off down her own rabbit holes. And, of course, after 2 years of external outrage over the possibility of the lab leak hypothesis, the nation's top medical research agency conducted an additional review of how the funds authorized by Fauci and friends were used by EcoHealth Alliance, the New York City-based nonprofit organization headed by frequent WIV collaborator Peter Daszak. Period. I just read that to you word for word. And it's a really long, clause-laden sentence. There's only one problem. It isn't a sentence. It's the kind of thing that'll get you bounced from freshman English. It's a fragment. It's a subject with a bunch of dependent clauses and no predicate. This shit gets circled in red on your freshman English paper. And in fact, if you waste the precious finite time of your life to read this birdcage liner, And you're free to do it and tell me that I'm completely just mad. Oh, look, here come the, yeah. Thank you for being so quick on the draw, Brother Deacon Asa. We buffered up and quit. Curiously, right in the middle of the story, exposing the way that right-wing memes are created. Now, I'm sure that that's just a coincidence. I mean, sometimes a cigar is only a cigar. Right, Dr. Freud? But the fact of the matter is, you're free to... Well, okay, sometimes you need to do that. Trey in Kentucky Stan said, yes! We're diagramming sentences now. I love it. Well, how else do you expect to figure out? And I'm not gooning on you, Trey. But this is the kind of stuff that you have to do if you want to figure out how these goddamn lies proliferate. Here, let's do this again. Let's go through the whole thing. First paragraph, second paragraph, as crafted by ink-stained wretch Tiana Lowe. A full 2 years after Wuhan hosted the 2019 Military World Games, determined by House Foreign Affairs Republicans to be one of the planet's first super spreader events of the novel coronavirus pandemic, comma, a top official at the National Institutes of Health has conceded that contrary to the repeated assertions of Dr. Anthony Fauci, the NIH did indeed fund highly dangerous gain-of-function research on bat-borne coronaviruses in the Wuhan Institute of Virology period. At least that's an entire sentence. It's an entire fabrication. It's entirely bilge. But as sort of a basement-level achievement, it's a whole sentence. Then you get the second paragraph, and things like this let you know when someone is scrambling to make something say something that something doesn't say. In a letter to Kentucky Republican James Comer, comma, the ranking member of the House Oversight Committee, comma, Lawrence A. Tabak of the NIH admitted that out of an abundance of caution and, comma, of course, comma, after 2 years of external outrage over the possibility of the lab leak hypothesis. Oh, I was wrong. It's not a sentence fragment. I found the verb. The nation's top medical research agency conducted an additional review of how the funds authorized by Fauci and friends, isn't it? Were used by Eco Health Alliance, comma, the New York City-based nonprofit organization. Okay, so she doesn't get bounced out of freshman comp. Yay, Tiana. But there are a couple of tells hiding in there, nonetheless. Determined by House Foreign Affairs Republicans to be one of the planet's first super spreader events. That means that the rest of the committee would not go along with it. Medical science wouldn't go along with it. Science in general wouldn't go along with it. But the barking, grunting, hooting, howling, shrieking maggots were hell-bent on putting it forward as an idea, even though it had no support. The bulk of Tabak's letter is spent. Oops. A little passive voice there, ink-stained wretch. Is spent on covering the potential culpability of the NIH, claiming some sort of false equivalence. You know, when you're a writer, ostensibly a reporter, and you're down to saying things like, claiming some sort of false equivalence. Well, see, that's not reporting. That's opinionating. Some sort of false equivalence. between the possible mutation time of the WIV-controlled RATG-13 to become SARS-CoV-2 to that of chimpanzees into contemporary human beings. But the admission is no less gratifying. Oh, that is a sentence fragment. But the admission is a prepositional phrase. Now, she could have left off the but, and it would have been a sentence. But the admission. Ugh. And my grammatical objections notwithstanding, this is all so much horseshit. What eager young scribe Tiana Lowe says is here isn't here. But they are still desperate over at the Washington Examiner to keep the virus alive. Like I said, one of my favorite signs at a protest down in Texas regarding women's reproductive rights says, "The coronavirus has more reproductive rights in Texas than a human woman does." Yes, yes, eager young scribe Tiana Lowe, previously interned for National Review, and she founded the USC Economics Review. She graduated from the University of Spoiled Children, the University of Southern California with a BS in economics and mathematics. Nothing in there about a minor in English, for rather obvious reasons. But when you interned for the National Review, it kind of tells you, it's a tell. It really is. And she does write some either yellow journalism or purple prose, pick your color. "Compare the NIH's apparent concession to Fauci's pearl-clutching outrage over the sheer notion that his department carved out exceptions from the Obama-era ban of gain-of-function research to fund the likes of EcoHealth." I guess that's the imperative voice. "Not even a year ago, tried and true virologists like Robert Redfield, President Donald Trump's head of the CDC, were smeared as Sinophobic bigots for entertaining the lab leak hypothesis, let alone the notion that Fauci and his friends funded the virus's creation." Well, it's still a notion, Tiana. Or is that Tatiana? No. No, she can do the dirty ethnic stuff. I won't do that. Smeared as Sinophobic bigots for entertaining the lab leak hypothesis. See, she creatively uses the word hypothesis in there when it isn't a hypothesis. It's the lab leak conspiracy theory. But that doesn't look nearly as compelling in print, does it? And so, I've made a sort of a mental note to myself that going forward, I'll keep an eye out for Joe Biden says he was vice president for 36 years. I'll keep an eye out for NIH admits Dr. Fauci created the virus. And maybe on a strictly informal basis, we'll get a little picture of how this toxic mendacity spreads among people who eventually wind up finding themselves horizontally crucified, chemically paralyzed and having every last breath provided to them by a machine while they can still hear people around them. And they lay there helpless, knowing that they're on the way out. Sadly, tragically, and this thing ends so ominously. She begins, having begun one sentence with "but," well, once you've started that, you're off down the garden path. So it ends with, "And now it's clear that few stateside." Well, where are you writing from, Tiana? "And now it's clear that few stateside would have any reason to hide the origins of the pandemic. That is," because pandemic, period. "That is, unless you subverted one President Barack Obama's ban on funding such research out of fear that a catastrophe the likes of COVID-19 might just happen." Da-na-na. I doubt that many maggots got all the way to the bottom of this pathetic screed. They probably hit a brick wall with Sinus Flomax. What? "That's how it gets in you, Marbeline. It says right here, it gets in your sinuses. We got any Flomax?" Well, maybe it is, Scary Jerry. It sounds like all that business sounds like a screenplay, Robin. I think you should call it maybe Elysium. Maybe you should get Eminem to be the lead actor. "Sorry I got cut off last night," Scary Jerry says. "I was physically trying to catch a bus." You're going to need a big net for that, Jerry. Keep going, Auntie Robin. "Well, I'm trying. I'm really, really trying. I am." So, I saw all that, and I know we need to talk about the vote to hold the man who looks like hot dog smell in contempt. And there was more zaniness on Capitol Hill today. I'm sure the clips have all been played near ad infinitum. But it's still the, I don't know, I have this feeling that there's some kind of manipulation going on, you know, just like the human, just like the monkey jellyfish hybrids of the old, of old Kowloon. I don't know. And then we've got this clip. They are so much better at messaging than us. God, they are. This is a clip from that show that the old dude who's the life support for a hair system for a haircut does over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. You know, the Hannity job. And since it's a clip featuring the wrong John Kennedy, you know, the one who's alive and has that jubilation tea cornpone voice that he uses for the rubes back in Louisianistan, even though he's got an advanced graduate degree from, wait a minute, the home of the comma, Oxford. Well, Senator Kennedy uses a word here, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's doing a lot of hard work filling in for a different word that Senator Kennedy would badly like to use instead. Let's find out.
Senator, I'll let you jump right into this discussion. All of these problems that we're discussing here are preventable. And they're all about to get worse, because if we fire the healthcare workers and the cops and the firemen and the other medical workers and our military, I hate to think what that...
Wait, we're firing the military? I have this suspicion. Wait, I have a hypothesis. If Fox News TV Radio Rwanda went off the air, the statistical impact on high blood pressure in this country would probably diminish by at least an order of magnitude. You heard the same thing I heard, right? You know, we're going to fire all the healthcare workers, and we're going to fire the police, and we're going to fire the military. Well, hell, we'll be over. You know what? The Russians and the Chinese can shake hands right there in St. Louis, because we're going to done get overrun, because we're going to fire our nurses and our healthcare workers and our cops and our military. Because there's no nuance in that little snippet. Some of. A portion of. Right? Now. Oh, well, they're on a roll. By the time Emery and Marveline had gotten to this point in the clip, however... Marveline, I don't see him here. Where's my nitroglycerin pills? I'm feeling a little Angela-ish. My Angela is acting up. Did you take your blood pressure medicine that the doctor done give you today, Emery? Yeah, but didn't you hear Marveline? Sean Hannity, he wouldn't lie. He's saying that we're going to fire the whole dang military. Every last one of them.
Okay, all right, wait a minute. I think this is a cowbell. Yeah, it is.
We are firing the military, says Randy Radar. You just load them into tiny little cannons and boom. You know, it's just like the circus. Wait, those aren't tiny little cannons. Firing the military. I don't know. Maybe we're going to have a military made up of nothing but them robot dogs with the sniper scopes on them, what I done see the other day.
Impact will be on the economy.
Sean, this is certainly about more than treadmills.
Huh? Yeah, meanwhile, Matt in San Francisco says, firing the anti-vaxxers, I would propose that firing the various anti-vaxxers would lead to market improvement in the collective IQ of each organization, thus improving outcomes. Think about that. And I'm not necessarily talking, and nobody, you know, I don't want anybody in the hospital over COVID. It would be nice if COVID would go the fuck away. But do you really want...
There's a reason I think about things like this. Do you really want an anti-vaxxer treating you? Do you want an anti-vaxxer doing your COVID test? Do you want an anti-vaxxer giving you your vaccine? Do you want an anti-vaxxer so much as taking your history and physical when you first walk in? Because I can assure you, I do not. And I hate taking things on faith, but I think I'm kind of in that position where I have to take it on faith that everybody that's going to be around me is going to be thoroughly vaccinated. That might be the policy of the University of Alabama Birmingham Hospital. I don't know. It's in Alabama, after all. That might be communism. But anyway, let's get back to Senator Foghorn Leghorn. It's got something to do with more with treadmills?
If you have a pulse and a marginal desire for a better life.
Okay, check.
You know that President Biden is in trouble.
I've got the pulse, and I've got the marginal desire for a better life. Well, actually, my desire for a better life is more than marginal. So maybe that lets me out of the control group. I'm not sure.
And therefore, America's in trouble. Measured any way you want. The debacle in Afghanistan, which has...
Wait. I thought the debacle in Afghanistan was something that was 20 years long that was started by George W. Bush. Are we talking about a different debacle here?
Bolded Russia and China and Iran, the unbridled inflation.
Unbridled inflation. Yeah, we're feeding dollar bills into the wood-burning stove just like they were in Weimar Germany. Sure we are. Because, well, unbridled. Yeah.
You've got a collapse of confidence in the currency. People are going to panic.
Yeah.
There's going to be gold riots, atonal music, right. Political chaos, right. Mass suicide, right?
Yeah.
It's Germany before Hitler.
Uh-huh.
You can see that.
Yeah.
Jesus. I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,200.
Oh, that would be awful.
That would be awful. The clip for everything. Unbridled inflation.
Gas prices, open borders.
Man, I tell you what, I don't know how Senator Leghorn manages to get out of bed in the morning. He must just every day just be sitting there quaking with fear, shaking like a dog trying to pass a peach pit. Gee, I wonder if something besides President Biden might have something to do with the increase in gasoline prices. I mean, work with me here. What if the world oil supply is a worldwide global market? And what if nobody actually fixes the prices of the oil, but instead the price of a barrel of oil is based on a handful of gamblers betting on which way the price will go while they themselves are controlling which way the price will go? And what if those gamblers get paid based upon how much a barrel of oil goes for 3 months from now? Ah, that just sounds crazy. It's all Joe Biden's fault. See, back when Nitwit Nero was president, we had free gasoline for everybody. You just drive up to the pump and fill up your tank and just let the gasoline run out onto the ground, because there ain't no such thing as global warming. There ain't no such thing as pollution. And the gasoline was free. Because I'm remembering that with my maggot memory. because I ordered it off of Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. It's called Maggot Memory Made Easy. And all you got to do is fall asleep with it playing every night with the special speaker that they don't provide under your pillow. And you wake up the next morning, and Emery looks over at Marvel and says, "You know what, Marveline? Everything was better under President Trump. You remember all that free gasoline? You remember all that free food? You remember how they was just giving away mansions?" No, I'm not talking about that West Virginia senator. He's a dick. Remember that, Marveline?
Crime, a Justice Department that thinks parents are dangerous domestic terrorists.
Only when they are, only when they show up at school board meetings and start barking and grunting and hooting about how they're, "By God, I don't want to hear nothing about no anal sex." Or when they show up outside the school board meeting and set up a well-funded rally and start talking about Second Amendment remedies and things like that. No, they're not parents. Parents, imagine that, parents being dangerous. I hate to admit it, but you know who was a parent? Lee Harvey Oswald. Little baby Oswald. Yep. I don't know John Wilkes. I don't think John Wilkes Booth was a parent. But I'm pretty sure there were some other parents there that turned out to be dangerous. Might even have turned out to be, well, terrorists. See, Matt remembers. Subject line, free gas. "Gas was so cheap under Trump, I would pull up to the pump and fill the back seat of my electric car with unleaded. Just because it was, and you hate to miss out on a bargain, don't you, Matt?" Yeah, I'd put some in old plastic milk jugs and take it home and put it in the freezer. Thaw it out for later. But we're not there yet. There's a word coming.
A Treasury Department that wants access to the checking account of every American who has a job. No wonder the American people are so angry. It's no wonder that so many Americans think that this administration doesn't care about them or their lives or their future.
He lives in an alternate universe, doesn't he? The maggots live in an alternate universe, don't they? Are you so angry? Because I think we were talking on the program just yesterday about what an astonishingly good job Joe Biden is doing, such that it is as if his entire life has led up to this moment. Joe Biden's presidency isn't failing. If there is an existential problem with Joe Biden's presidency, the existential problem is created by the likes of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and Moscow Mitch McConnell. House of Representatives doing their job, clipping right along. They've sent bill after bill after bill after bill after bill after bill after bill. And it goes to the Senate. And between the three of them, Moscow Mitch, Joe Manchin, and Kyrsten Sinema, they kill them dead. Okay, well, to be fair, Joe Manchin did not kill the voting rights bill dead. That was his baby. He was sure that if we compromised on the John Lewis Act and the Voting Rights Act, he was sure that if we came up with, that he could bring some Republicans along. Well, they had a little vote yesterday in the Senate of the United States to figure out whether or not the Senate could even talk about Joe's bill. You know what the Republicans said? No, nope, we're not going to have anybody talking about everybody being able to vote who's legally able to vote. We like voter suppression. Because if everybody who can who is legally eligible to vote votes, well, there won't be no Republican Party no more. And we'll be off the gravy train. And we won't get those sweet, 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 sweet right-wing wingnut welfare jobs and checks. And there won't be, you know, big old money checks coming from Big Pharma or the coal, oil, and gas industry or the insurance industry. And then where will America be? Wait, don't talk about that.
Now, I say this with respect, with all the respect I can muster.
This means it's going to be a scurrilous fucking lie, but, you know, we probably all know that, right?
But my advice to the president is this.
Get the hockey puck.
Mr. President, you've just got to try harder not to suck.
Well, I'm so glad he said that with respect, aren't you? This now that calls for an academic response. Yes, Professor?
You dick!
That's what I was thinking. Try harder not to suck. See, this is such political theater. And we understand that it's political theater when we understand that dude here who's sitting there talking to the life support system for a haircut, whose entire business model depends on keeping the blood pressure of Emory and Marvelline up, thereby, of course, helping Big Pharma. This guy used to be, wait for it, a Democrat. He did. Really, really did. He was the Democratic state treasurer of the state of Louisiana, Stan. But one day, back when there was a little proto-insurrection called teabaggerism, this disembodied hand appeared in the office of the state treasurer of Louisiana, Stan, and it extended its index finger. And it wrote upon the wall, many, many tekel ufarsin. And then, poof, it was gone. And that's when John Kennedy of Louisiana Stan realized that if he wanted to continue to keep his cushy bullshit job, that he'd better stop being a Democrat and stop actually giving a flying fuck about what happened to everyday Louisiana Stannies, working people, the alleged middle class, the working class. And as quick as he did that and said, oh, I'm a conservative Southern Republican, oh, yes, and along comes Donald Trump. And the next thing you know, there's John Kennedy on his knees in front of Nitwit Nero. Just a bowing and a scraping. And he's absolutely a darling of anybody that wants to book somebody to say something shitty or outrageous. Yeah, with respect, try harder not to suck. Because, of course, John Kennedy would be so fantastic as President of the United States. Getting up there every day and using his talking to the rubes, put on foghorn, leghorn voice. When he knows perfectly well how to speak the Queen's English. Speak the speech, I pray thee, tripping me from the tongue. Yeah, I caught that too. Ralph says, you know, with all respect, like in The Godfather. Then the next thing you know, you've got a knife through your hand and somebody's mailing you a wrapped up fish. Right. That's how that works. because of course. But again, this is a bit of an onion. And even with as toxic as this has been heretofore, well, there's still more. Steve in New York says, try not to suck. Either that's what all the respect I can muster in the Trumpiverse is, or wait a sec, what would all of the disrespect I can muster look like, sound like? Yeah, he's so clever. That's why he done went to Oxpatch.
And the best way to do that, in my opinion, is stop worrying so much about the wokers. You're never going to make them happy. They hyperventilate on their yoga mats at the slightest provocation. You're never going to make them happy. Stop worrying about the wokers and start worrying about America's workers. And I'm talking about the people who get up every day and go to work and obey the law and pay their taxes and try to do...
In other words, no one named Trump. But that word. That word. The wokers. The wokers. I know he was trying to be clever and use all his Oxpatch learning and compare that with the add an R and it becomes a worker. But when you're using an accent, a put-on accent, like Senator Foghorn Leghorn here is using. Wokers somehow sounds like maybe there's another word that he'd rather be using. And maybe uses privately. We are, after all, talking about Louisiana Stan. Yeah, I feel sorry. Like, I got any business feeling sorry. I feel sorry, I do. For people, you know, the good, solid, decent human being, progressive people who have this clown for a senator. Again, living in the glass house I live in, I should probably not be throwing any stones, and I'm not throwing stones. There are actually just so few people in America. Okay, not so few. But it's just so attenuated. The people in America who have a senator they can be proud of. The people of Connecticut. Hi, Darlene. The people of Rogues Island. Hi, Albert. Hi, Charlene. Massachusetts. Oh, great. Gunfire. We've been having a coyote problem. They're probably dealing with that. Getting kind of bold, the coyotes are. It's Joe Biden's fault, too. Right. But to have to look to a John Kennedy or a Joe Manchin or a Kyrsten Sinema, or in my case, a Shelley Moore Capito, not less. It's just, well, it's gross, embarrassing.
Do the right thing by their kids. They made America great. Ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And we're not going to get this country back on track. And the president's not going to be more popular with the American people until he stops worrying about wokers and starts worrying about workers.
Well, that's his third use of the word wokers there. So I'm just trying to figure out who the wokers are. Apparently, they have yoga mats. I have a yoga mat. Have you ever tried to do? Well, I'm sure many of us have. It's kind of not pleasant to try to do sit-ups on a frigid, cold linoleum floor. Yoga mats help with that. But you know what? People in America who work for a living, they don't use no yoga mats. They don't eat yogurt neither. And they don't complain. And they get up and they go to work. Them wokers, they're just sitting around having a conniption all day long. Ain't no wokers go to work. The only problem is, a lot of the things that get the wokers worked up are things that happen in the workplace where they're trying to be law-abiding and feed their family, just like John Kennedy here says the people who aren't wokers do. So I guess if you're a not woker, when you get fired from your job for no reason at all and you don't have any union representation, well, you just take it and you say, by God, ain't that America, the home of the free? Ain't that America? Yeah. Because wokers, well, they spend all their, your wokers, they spend all their time being woke and going to protest marches and burning down cities. Right? Because them hard-working Americans, well, we know what hard-working Americans do. The ones that aren't wokers. They heed the call of their president. And they head off to Washington, D.C. in the freezing cold of January, and they, by God, attack the seat of constitutional governance of the United States of America. That's what your non-wokers do. Wokers. Wonder if that's entering the lexicon of the right wing. He's repeated it three times, just the same way that St. Peter denied Christ three times before the cock crowed. He's obviously trying to repeat it sufficiently that it will worm its way into the minds of the Emrys and Marvelines out there. Marveline, I'm sick of these wokers. They're just ruining America. We could be having free gasoline again if it wasn't for them wokers. Them and their yoga mats. And their $5 cups of coffee. Them wokers is destroying America. And I know that because a man done said it to me in an accent what I can understand.
And that's, to me, is what it's all about.
You know something?
No, Sean, he doesn't know anything. Now, that is 2 minutes and 37 seconds. Where's the content? Where's anything that makes the poor, benighted fools who keep this fucker from ever having to actually work a job, where's anything that makes their lives any better? That's just 2 minutes and 37 seconds of trying to raise the viewership blood pressure numbers. You know, when we come back after a break, we'll talk about the wokers some more. But now this, from Blood Pressure Pills R Us. You know, you can get your blood pressure medication online now. From Blood Pressure Pills R Us. I know. Stephen New York says, honestly, I'm so sick of people who don't speak for me claiming to say what the American people want. You know, maybe I've just hit on it. I'm not American. Well, it's abundantly clear to me, based on what I've been hearing lately, that I'm not a real West Virginian. apparently you're only a real West Virginian if you agree with Joe Manchin, and maybe your family's only been here 100 years or so. Yeah, those of us whose people were here, you know, 300 years, right? You're not a real West. Yeah, you're probably, you know what? It was Virginia when your people came here. You're not a real West Virginian. Maybe you need to go over there and, yeah. People say, you know, Robin, why don't you just move? I'd miss my friends here, something fierce. And I'm at an age where making new friends is kind of difficult. But Virginia is not that far away. And they seem to be working real hard at getting all civilized and shit. It's a blue state. I mean, Megan was talking the other day about it being sort of purplish, but looks kind of blue to me. And they're doing things that actually benefit people who don't even have yoga mats. And there's some parts of Virginia that are every bit almost as pretty as West Virginia. Said almost. To see there's Virginia and best Virginia. Wokers. Oh, he wants to use the word so bad, doesn't he? God, he's just aching. But damn, where does half the program go? Because we're halfway through the program. We've still got $1,129 to raise. And thank you, Ralphs, for getting us started. $1,129. That means $229 to be finished with fundraising for Monday. And it would be great if we could do that because, well, we will have the largest ever fundraising hole tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch, our birthday. That we have ever had, if we stay at 1129. No, we won't. No, we won't. It'll be 1429. We'd still be under that $1,500 number we had last week. But that $1,500 number we had last week is why we've got an $1,129. Right. It's also confusing. But it's also Thursday, and that means we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always enjoy it. It's so hopeful and optimistic and shit. Nah, I love Brad and Desi. And this is Conversation Radio. If there's something you'd like to get said, you are welcome to jump into the program at any point in time. Over on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Maybe during the time that I'm flat on my back, I can deal with some of these little annoying things that just kind of remain and continue to bedevil me. But it's still Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Or the Stress Line, named in honor of Bill Mr. Stress Miller, gone but not forgotten by any stretch of the imagination. And you can jump in there at 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. THEHORN, 844-843-4676. In the meantime, what do you got, Brad and Desi?
It's Thursday, October 21, 2021.
What this tells us, by 2030, when we need to be, cutting production in half, we're going to be more than double.
Fossil fuel production dangerously out of sync with global climate targets, UN warns. Failure to act on climate change imperils millions of lives, new report finds. California expands emergency drought declaration. Plus,
look, climate policy is never easy.
New study finds cutting U.S. emissions is difficult, but still doable.
We'll see all of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
A global shortage of CO2 is having an effect on the supply of carbonated drinks.
A shortage of CO2? Am I the only one who finds that maddeningly ironic? Maybe. This is your Green News Report.
Get ready for this season's hot new beverage, Coke Flat. None of the fizz, all of the brown.
Okay, Desi Doyen, from your teasers there, it sounds like you got nothing but bad news for us today. For a change.
Well, wait, there might be some good news at the end.
We'll see.
First up, California Governor Gavin Newsom officially expanded an emergency drought declaration in the state, directing regulators to take more aggressive steps to curtail water use after two of nearly the driest months in California history. Although a big storm is forecast for Northern California that will help contain ongoing massive fires, it will also increase the risk of flash floods and deadly mudslides in burn areas.
Yeah, nothing but bad news.
And of course, one storm is not enough to end the state's 22-year mega drought.
No, it ain't.
A slew of reports this week have issued dire warnings ahead of the United Nations Global Climate Summit in Glasgow starting on November 1st. First, the United Nations Environment Program's annual production gap report this week found world governments have plans on the books to produce more than double the amount of fossil fuels in 2030 than is consistent with keeping global temperatures from rising more than 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels that would help us avoid catastrophic global warming.
In other words, countries around the world are planning to produce way too much fossil fuels, even though they know they must stop.
Exactly. The future production plans of 15 countries, including the United States, underscores the chasm between meaningful climate action and the rhetoric of policymakers and business leaders. The 1.5 degree aspirational target under the Paris Climate Agreement is considered particularly important because overshooting increases the risk of triggering global climate tipping points.
Oh, we're going to trigger those tipping points.
A new report in the medical journal The Lancet warns that global warming is now the world's greatest threat to human health, and failure to act on it endangers millions of lives. The report tracks 44 global health indicators tied to climate change, like deadly heat waves, infectious diseases, pollution, and hunger, and found that all are getting worse.
I guess we haven't got to that good news part yet.
We have not. In Washington...
Oh, I know we're not getting the good news now.
Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of the coal state of West Virginia has all but killed Democrats' landmark clean electricity performance program that would have incentivized utilities to accelerate the shift to renewable energy. But a new report from research firm Rhodium Group finds that the U.S. climate targets to cut emissions in half by 2030 is still within reach, even without the program. Difficult, but doable, if the White House, federal agencies, states, and corporations act swiftly.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
The analysis also confirms that decarbonizing the electricity sector will lower consumers' energy bills. And they didn't even include the enormous public health benefits from reducing air pollution, which alone would easily pay for the transition.
But will it put money in Joe Manchin's pockets? That's the important thing here, I think.
But enacting meaningful climate policy at all levels of government requires sustained public pressure. According to UC Santa Barbara climate policy expert Dr. Leah Stokes on a recent broadcast,
people should keep the pressure up. And if those listening want to get involved, there's a website called call4climate.com, call4climate.com, and it has a phone number, and it will just patch you directly through to your representatives and your senators, give you a script for what to ask for, and that's the way you can get involved in this moment. So despair is not an option.
If despair is not an option, why do I have so much despair?
Finally, some good news.
Yay!
The Biden administration this week began the process of establishing a 20-year moratorium on new copper mining in Minnesota's Superior National Forest. The move could derail a proposal by a Chilean mining corporation to develop a massive, controversial copper and nickel mine in the watershed of the beloved Boundary Waters National Canoe Area Wilderness.
Like I said, not much good news, but we'll take what we can get. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And hey, during the Green News Report, thank you so much to Christopher over using Venmo. Thank you, Christopher, with the message from one woker to another, keep them yoga mats in good use. It's right over there. Yeah. And I mean, it's not a highfalutin yoga mat. It's just a low rent yoga mat, but it gets a little work, and it's gonna travel with us. Because I probably won't have a lot. Well, maybe not. We're gonna be kind of pressed for space heading down. But thank you, Christopher. We're down to 1109. We can $10 will get us under the $1,100 mark. $110 will get us over under the $1,000 mark. And that would get us to, only $99 to be done funding with last Monday. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so kindly. Oh, where to go? There's so much madness in the first half of the program. A little miracle happened. Not like a community-made miracle or anything. No, this is... according to BuzzFeed, God, somebody finally got a somewhat harsh sentence for attacking the seat of government, the seat of constitutional governance on January the 6th. And you'll forgive me for taking note of the irony. Oh, my Jesus. It happened today, and the federal judge actually gave more jail time than the U.S. Department of Justice was asking for. And it has to do with U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan. And she was hearing the case of the People versus Troy Smocks. And Troy Smocks has been charged with having, incited... people to do what they did, among other things. He encouraged his fellow maggots to prepare our weapons and go hunting for Democrats. He said this on Parler, and no shit, he got, wait for it, 14 months in the federal stir. 14 months. That may be the harshest sentence that has yet been handed down. And that 14 months exceeded what the pettifogger for Troy Smocks from Texas, of course, and the U.S. Attorney's Office had asked for. He'd already done 9 months in jail, and everybody pretty much agreed. Well, you know, okay, we'll call that even then. But Judge Chutkan wasn't having any of it, primarily because Troy Smocks, maggot, did not understand, and it's vitally important that we do understand these things, did not understand the first law of holes. When you're in one, quit digging. The prosecution said, you know, we want the low end of an 8 to 14 month window, but Judge Chutkan handed him the max. He also said that he wanted to go hunting for tech company executives. And, of course, rhinos. Republicans in name only, and we discussed that. Rhinos actually means anybody who doesn't bow and scrape before the MAGA agenda. It's a little less surprising simply because Judge Chutkan has been handing out tougher sentences than the government asked for in a few other cases. So an African American federal judge handed down one of the harshest sentences thus far because a dude could not shut his mouth. And an African American federal judge handed down one of the harshest sentences thus far to an African American man. He was charged and pled guilty, Troy Smocks did, posting messages online throughout the January 6th that called for violence against anybody who didn't support his God Emperor. He was not charged with entering the Capitol or parading or any of that other stuff. So he decided to argue with Judge Chutkan, and he said that he had had it worse than other maggots charged with misdemeanors for going into the Capitol. Judge Chutkan found it grossly offensive when Troy Smocks, maggot, said that he should be compared to Martin Luther King Jr. No, really. A guy who was encouraging people to do violence against their political, the people they disagree with politically, said that was just like Dr. King. Completely oblivious to the irony of the argument. And Judge Chutkan didn't take it at all well. She said people died fighting for civil rights. People were gassed. They were beaten. They were tortured mentally and physically. For you to hold yourself up as a soldier in that fight is really quite audacious. And yes, Troy Smocks is the highest amount of prison time that any federal judge has handed down so far in relation to the insurrection against constitutional governance in the United States of America on January 6th. And maybe what made it worse is not only was he suggesting all day on January 6th that people should murder Democrats, etc. He then made a future threat. And he said, many of us will return on January 19th, 2021, carrying our weapons in support of our nation's resolve, to which the world will never forget. And then he responded to Nitwit Nero's call to arms, where he said that he wanted people to fight like hell. So over the next 24 hours, I would say, let's get our personal affairs in order, prepare our weapons. He capitalized the P, the O, and the W in prepare our weapons. He is a true acolyte of Nitwit Nero, and then go hunting. Let's hunt these cowards down like the traitors that each of them are. This includes rhinos, Dem, and tech execs. We now have the green light. All who resist us are enemies of our Constitution and must be treated as such. Interesting take on what the Constitution contains, wouldn't you say? Yeah. Now, the other cases were largely misdemeanors, but what Troy Smocks did was actually a felony, making threats. It carried a max of 5 years. And along the way, Troy Smocks, well, I don't think he got the sentence he got because black. He got the sentence he got because he had a rap sheet that had 18 priors on it. But they were 20 years ago. He also lied about being a veteran. bless his little pettifogger's heart, John Machado, his lawyer, said, well, there might be some evidence of him being in the military. It might be in one of his earlier criminal cases. Well, counselor, do you have that document? No, I don't have that document with me today. I don't have a copy. Dog ate it. And tried to pettifog his way around what his client had done by saying, well, you know, this wasn't as serious as it's being made out to be. It's not like he made threats against anybody by name. Well, the problem is the maggots, that's how stochastic terrorism works. The maggots understand the code. Democrats, they get real easy. And people involved in social media often know about, say, you know, the head of Facebook or the head of Twitter. And then rhinos. Well, Nitwit Nero names people as he'll tell you who the damn rhinos are. Right. And then his pettifogger said, well, I mean, it didn't post anybody by name. And Judge Chutkan was having none of that either. And she said, you know, he might want to ask the members of Congress who hid under their desks during the riots. We're still calling it a riot. I really wish we paid more attention to language. We might have a little more luck during the insurrection. I know, it's kind of hard to avoid. Brother Deacon Asa says, wait a second, so all the white maggots get 6 days in the hoosegow with credit for time served, but a brother has to get his ass posted up on the stir for 14 months? No fair. Well, that was a felony. The other folks are misdemeanors. But still, you're kind of down the rabbit hole there. And you gotta wonder how he wound up getting charged with all those fraud claims 20 years ago, because the rap sheet with 18 convictions on it was 20 years old. But somehow or another, somebody still, well, a lot of people probably failed Troy Smocks. Might even argue that maybe Troy Smocks failed Troy Smocks. Because nobody put a gun to his head and made him. Was there nobody? Hey, Troy, no! Nitwit Nero's not your buddy. And in point of fact, he's not the only person of color to be charged so far in the insurrection. And he's not the only one to be subjected to pretrial detention. He did go on January 6th, but apparently he didn't show up. Mm-hmm. Parler. Oh, and speaking of which, there's going to be a new social media platform. And they worked long and hard coming up with the name of it. It's going to be Truth Social. Oh my God! The little K-pop fans are gonna. Nah, maybe not, because the beta version of Truth Social, which is being touted by Nitwit Nero, is going to be released in beta in November next month, and sometime in the first quarter of 2022, they're going to have a nationwide rollout of Truth Social. And of course, it was accompanied by a grievance release by Nitwit Nero, because of course. Oh, let's see here. Yeah, there's that. Mm-hmm. Tech executives, remember Troy Smocks, tech executives.
We live in a world where the Taliban has a huge presence on Twitter. Yet your favorite American president has been silenced. This is unacceptable. I'm excited to send out my first truth on Truth Social very soon. TMTG was founded with a mission to give a voice to all. I'm excited to soon begin sharing my thoughts on Truth Social and to fight back against Big Tech. Everyone asks me, why doesn't someone stand up to Big Tech? Well, we will be soon.
Mm-hmm. Soon. As soon as the thing does goes to open usage, yeah, I have no doubt that the K-pop kids will be posting pictures of goats and the like. Because, of course. Thing is, you might get on the waiting list for people seeking that invitation-only beta usage.
Follow the truth. Truth Social is America's big tent social media platform that encourages an open, free, and honest global conversation without discriminating against political ideology.
What makes me think that some of the first invites are going to go out to, Russian troll farms? But, like I said, other folks are already sort of, testing it. A tech reporter for the Washington Post by the name of Drew Harwell tweeted, anyone can create an account on Trump's social network, Truth Social, using a publicly available link. I literally just registered Mike Pence. The site hasn't even launched yet, and it's already this vulnerable. And, dadgummit, Nobody ever told Drew Harwell the three commandments of W.C. Fields. You can't cheat an honest man. Never give a sucker an even break, and don't smarten up a chump. So he put it out there publicly that it was easy to register a bullshit account. So, the previously accessible pages of True Social are now disabled. And here's how they pitch it.
Think of a giant outdoor event tent at your best friend's wedding. Who's there? The combination of multiple families from all over the United States and the world. Uncle Jim from Atlanta is a proud libertarian. Aunt Kelly from Texas is a staunch conservative. Your cousin John from California is a diehard liberal. And guess what? They're all together to have an amazing time and share their viewpoints of the world. Although we don't always agree with each other, we welcome these varied opinions and welcome the conversation.
Yeah, there's one other little wrinkle that goes with all of this. Investors pumped in some $300 million to create this new Dodge. The only problem is the people who ponied up the $300 million didn't know that Nitwit Nero was involved in it. New York Times said, the details of Mr. Trump's latest partnership were vague. The statement he issued was reminiscent of the kind of claims he made about his business dealings in New York as a real estate developer. It was replete with high-dollar amounts and superlatives that could not be verified. And this is all courtesy of something called Digital World Acquisition. That sounds ominous. Which is a SPAC, a Special Purpose Acquisition Company. The New York Times going on to note, these so-called blank check companies are an increasingly popular type of investment vehicle that sells shares to the public with the intention of using the proceeds to buy private businesses. At the time that investors bought shares in Digital World, it had not disclosed what, if any, companies it planned to acquire. On its website, Digital World said that its goal was to focus on combining with a leading tech company. Saba Capital Management was one of the investors that got involved in this, and they had no idea at the time of the IPO that Digital World was rolling around between the sheets with Nitwit Nero. So here's the over-under. Does this thing flop soon? Does it last longer or shorter than Parler? As to
your favorite American president.
Brother Deacon Asa says, your favorite American president? Fuck him for making assumptions. My favorite American president is that guy who used to hold Birth of a Nation screenings in the White House. Yeah, that would be Woodrow Wilson. Or then there's James Buchanan, America's only bachelor president. The guy who used to share a bed with a senator from Alabama whose nickname among the other senators was Nancy. And until legislation was passed in Washington State, he was the actual namesake of King County, Washington. Rufus King. Mm-hmm. The irony never ceases. All right, let's run over to the stress line and check in with Randy Radar. Hey, Randy.
Hi there. Apparently, according to my limited ability to research, Trump has skated on the 2016 campaign finance violations because the statute of limitations is 5 years. So it would have run out in 2020 while he was still president, unless being exempt from prosecution is some sort of delay in the statute of limitations.
Well, there's probably a wrinkle in there somewhere. But yeah, if the acts alleged took place in 2015, then that runs in 2020. But there are things that toll, that's the term, toll the statute of limitations.
So you can still be prosecuted for that?
I do not know. I think the Justice Department has made clear that they're not gonna. And it's interesting you would bring that up because Merrick Garland was testifying in the Senate today.
Yeah.
And he took a bit of a grilling over why Nitwit Nero is not in the dock. Representative Steve Cohen of Tennessee in the House Judiciary Committee hearing asked him about it, and it didn't reflect well on Merrick Garland. It was not much of an in the way of excuse. I have the audio here.
That's a mistake. The rule of law, you made clear, and I know you believe this, is one of the major tenets of the Department of Justice to uphold the rule of law. Michael Cohen has a felony on his record, spent time in prison for paying, at the direction of President Trump, hush money to Stormy Daniels and another woman. I believe that it's pretty well known that President Trump was individual one, as described in the indictment. He couldn't be indicted because of Department of Justice policy. You don't indict a sitting president. He's no longer a sitting president. Do you believe that not looking into indicting individual one, equally if not more guilty than Michael Cohen, is not an abuse of equal protection under the law and an abrogation of the idea that the rule of law is principle?
So, Congressman, and a very important element of the rule of law is the norm of the Justice Department that we don't comment on whether we're investigating, what the status of investigations are unless and until there's a public charge. That's important to protect everyone, whether it be a former president, an existing president, or a public official or a private individual.
I will accept that, but I hope that you will look at it because I believe that he is equally, if not more, guilty, and it does seem that people get favored treatment if he's not prosecuted. Transparency is important as well.
How's that make you feel, Randy?
just beaming with confidence.
No. You're being sarcastic, aren't you? Yes. But I mean, yeah. Representative Cohen's question is well put. You couldn't indict him because he was a sitting president because of that stupid guidance. And he's not one anymore.
It isn't
anymore.
Even a law, is it?
No, it's not a law.
Okay, all right. It's just guidance, right? Yeah.
Unfortunately, it has the effect of law-ishness on the Department of Justice. So until somebody does something about it, it's going to continue to leave us in a world of potentially lawless presidents.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's basically we're not commenting. That's what he's got. That's what Merrick Garland has. He certainly didn't. You know, there's commenting. There's we don't comment, and that means, you know, we don't. Well, you know, we've got a rock solid case here. You don't do shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the statute of limitations problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine what kind of howling and barking and shrieking would have ensued. And you say, well, you know, it's too late. So it could be, okay, and we talked about the tolling of the statute of limitations.
Yeah.
It could be that it was held in abeyance while he was president. So maybe, you know, maybe the full 5 years hasn't run, because if you can't charge somebody because they're president, that person should not be able to take advantage of a statute of limitations that's running while you can't be prosecuted. Do you see the argument?
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know how that plays.
Can I just shift things onto a home economics tip?
Sure.
Well, there's these things they're putting in the water, and I realize they have to put them in the water, the city water, that is, called chloramines and fluoride compounds. Okay.
Yeah.
These are free radicals, and they're highly reactive. It's sort of like if you're drinking city water one morning and they dump it in overnight, it's like you're drinking bleach, and it can really harm gut bacteria, I believe. Okay. And we talked about this before, after the show one night. But, like, they kind of have to put this in the water, supposedly, because stuff can grow in the delivery pipes. It's nasty.
And especially if you consider that those delivery pipes, as we learned here in West Virginia back in 2014 with the Freedom disaster, when you find out that the pipes are over 100 years old and they're iron, maybe rusty.
Yeah. So the iron probably won't harm you, but the chlorine and fluorine will kill your gut bacteria. I believe it's like drinking bleach, okay? And there's things called chloramide compounds that they put in the water. So to take most of this out is, if you have normal city water, is a fairly simple process. You can go on Amazon and you can get something called a Culligan faucet filter.
Yeah, Culligan.
You don't want a whole house filtration
Culligan,
system.
Culligan,
yeah. So, you can install one of these usually yourself with a miniature pipe wrench or a monkey wrench or whatever. Okay. So, I think that's really important for people who are experiencing digestive issues and don't realize that this may be one possible remedy for it.
Well, you can also use something as simple as a Brita filter. And just, you know, fill the pitcher.
Brita or Pure or whatever. But the key is you don't need a whole, usually, unless the water's really bad, you don't need a whole house filtration system.
No.
You can do it with just faucet filters.
Yeah, once upon a time when we lived deep in the country, I spent $10,000 on a water system back in the day.
Right, yeah.
Because our water stank because we were smack dab in the middle of 100 years worth of natural gas drilling.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, Brita filter.
I just want to throw that out there because people. I gave it to one of my friends, and he's not mechanically inclined, so he's going to get a friend to help him install this thing. And if he likes it enough, maybe he'll get himself a few more for all the other faucets in his house.
The kitchen mainly is good because that way you're not. I mean, you can filter.
I found I need one on every bathroom faucet too, because I get up in the middle of the night and I'm thirsty and I don't want to drink the stuff they put in there overnight. Like, you know, it'll mess up my digestion. So, like, I put one on the vanity faucets too, you know?
Sure.
And each one of these filters is good for like about 200 gallons or so. So they're activated charcoal carbon filters. Now, that'll take out some other stuff too, but like it's like having a pitcher or whatever, you know, one of these filtration pitchers, but it's in line with the faucet itself. The only thing I found that's a disadvantage with the Culligan model is that the, you can't attach a swiveler. Yeah, some swivel sprayer.
Yeah.
They didn't design it for that, so once you put this thing on, you can't put a swivel sprayer on the end of the thing. That's the only design flaw I found.
But if you've got a sprayer, it'll still work, though, right?
Not really. It doesn't fit on once you install the filter. You have to take the tip off. You have to take the small screen tip off the faucet and put it aside. And then either use one of the adapters in the kit or whatever. You're left with threads on the faucet. Okay.
Right. I've got that part, but like the faucet we have here.
Right. Yeah.
It's got. And then it's got the thing.
It's got the
spigot, the, you know, ordinary usage, but we've got one of those sprayers over off to one side, and you know, you use the spray.
Oh, the sprayer off to one side. Well, you don't drink from that usually.
No.
So.
Right. You just that's.
I'm talking about the stuff you drink. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there used to be something from Make Life Easier, William Drake or one of those catalogs, which was a swivel sprayer.
Oh, okay.
So that if you didn't have a sprayer off to the side, you could spray. It would spray and it would on the regular faucet, and you could spray it around the sink with a swivel sprayer. But they don't fit on once you put carbon. Culligan carbon filter on there. Yeah. Okay, so I hope that'll help the health of some of your listeners who are having digestive troubles because they don't realize they're drinking bleach when they turn on the city faucet. They don't make that connection.
This show being what it is, I've been showering this stuff for almost 18 years, so you know where I am.
Well, they do make shower faucets, but I don't see the sense in that, really. Like, they do make shower filters also.
I didn't know that. Well, thanks, Randy. It's always good hearing from you, my friend.
I'm sorry. I'm not really the heavy topic type of person sometimes that would suit the content of this
program. No. You're fine. And you know, Merrick Garland and the statute of limitations is a damned compelling issue. And hopefully maybe some of the legal eagles of the community will help out in that regard.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, take care, Randy. Bye now. It's our buddy Randy Radar. And we do. We've got, because among other things, it's been my experience that one salutary benefit of having a filter on the city water is that it dramatically reduces the need to descale the coffee makers. And that's why quite often I just use for the coffee made distilled water, because it's about as close as you can get to just being water once you get past the whatever toxic chemicals are going in via the plastic jug that it arrives in. Yeah. Oh, back to Truth Social for just a second. Brother Deacon Asa with a little more detail. It says, by the way, that $300 million is just the part that the investors contributed. The company is said to be valued at $860 million. What a magnificent grift. We're in the wrong business. So, well, I know. But don't have that kind of, you know, you got to have a certain kind of depraved heart to go down that road. But that was kind of, wasn't that kind of a weak-kneed response from Attorney General Garland? And it was a zany thing.
today. Because, of course, yeah, goody, I get to use it again. Jim Jacket Off Jordan was present in the hearing because he sits on House Judiciary. Remember, if the Republicans retake the House of Representatives in 2022, he plans to be the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, does Jim Jacket Off Jordan. And he'll be jacket off all for 2 years without let up. Yeah. It was and little foretaste today of Jim Jacket Off Jordan when he had a conniption on Merrick Garland. Hey, by the way, thank you, Mary Bell. Thank you so very much indeed. We are now down under the 1,100 mark. We are down to 1059. $159 from being fully funded for last Monday. Thank you, Mary Bell. Thank you so much. This is such a... this is such a race to, you know, end the month and face the long, empty space of early November. Thank you. I cannot thank you enough. So there we are at 10:59. It'd be great not to have a four-digit fundraising hole for our birthday, our birthday celebration tomorrow. A note coming from our dear sister Jude in the Great Northwest. I just arrived home from work. The subject line, the ground of our horn community, at least this is my awareness and focus. I just arrived home from work, one more day amongst the finest of fine, and now I'm here with you and the community. The enormous amount of troubling issues swirls around us, and you, dear heart, are a willing vessel to give of yourself to keep us awake. Well, I hope I'm keeping us awake. Sometimes I put people to sleep. It is not an easy path to consistently travel upon, yet you do it with an incredibly razor-focused manner, never falling short of energy, insight, or humor. If I may, offering the below as an affirmation. I love the affirmations we get from our sister Jude. Be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. From the unlikely sage, Dr. Seuss, Jude says, gotta love it. Yeah. Be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. Well, here we are. Nitwit Nero is so eager to have Truth Social up so that he can just say this and it'll run around the world and be amplified by troll farms in Russia.
The insurrection took place on November 3rd, Election Day. January 6th was the protest.
That's all it was. It was just a protest. Nobody attacked the capital of the United States. Nobody caused millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of damage. Nobody died.
Well, a high-ranking Democrat security person killed poor Ashley Babbitt.
God, this is just a question. I mean, are you motivated? And it's not a rhetorical question. I want to know: are you motivated? Do you see the nature of the threat against us? Do we understand how profound it is? This stupid fuck. Sorry. Now says that January 6th was a protest and November the 3rd was an insurrection. The people of the United States choosing someone besides him constituted an insurrection, and January the 6th was simply a protest. Are you chilled? Or will everything just be okay? Will you do what you can in the coming year to make sure that the Jim Jacket Off Jordans of the world do not get power, that he gets another 2 years of just barking while various and sundry law enforcement agencies look the other way the same way he looked the other way when boys were being raped at The Ohio State University? I find that motivating. Highly motivating. And somebody is running against Jim Jacketoff Jordan in his district in Ohio. Some Democrat is seeking the nomination to run against him. And it becomes a question of, is he just an annoyance? Is he just a clown? This kind of calculation does take place. Is he good for fundraising on our side? Is it good to have a Louis Asparagus Gohmert and a Jim Jacketoff Jordan and a Marjorie Traitor Gangrene Cue Ball out there? Is it helpful to the cause? If they were all just semi-reasonable and somewhat rational, would it be harder to run against them? Will the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee get behind whoever happens to be his opponent? You'll notice that Jim Shorts Jordan has evinced no interest whatsoever in the Senate seat being vacated the Republican senator from Ohio. Sorry, Rob Portman. He's leaving that to other barking maniacs like hillbilly eulogy grifter J.D. Vance. Hillbilly. Right. Maybe it is. Maybe he's good for our side. He's certainly good. You know, this is that Les Moonves moment, only with me. He's great. He's great for programs like this and other programs because, every mill needs grist. And I'll admit that. But I also think that he is a legitimate danger to the continued existence of this republic, because he would sell the Constitution down the river in a minute. So again, as noted in the conversation with Randy Radar, Merrick Garland showed up to do some testifying today. And Jim Jacketoff Jordan was all ready. He was gonna give Merrick Garland a good talking to. Because Jim Shorts Jordan is by far and away all kinds of smarter than Merrick Garland. Just ask Jim Jacketoff Jordan and he'll tell you. And so Jim Jacketoff Jordan was all upset. Senator Foghorn Leghorn from Louisiana Stan was earlier. He was all upset about calling the good, God-fearing, hard-working parents of America terrorists. Except those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian parents that keep showing up at the school board meetings don't actually live in the district. It's a manufactured, it is an astroturfed movement. Entirely driven out of the offices and the coffers of wingnut welfare, so-called think tanks, stink tanks. And so Jim Jacketoff Jordan had hard questions for Merrick Garland.
Hello, I'm Tiffany, and welcome to The Raw Report. The House Judiciary Committee hearing with Attorney General Merrick Garland was brief.
Yeah, we can kind of blow past that. Funny how Well, never mind. Don't need a reader on it. What he was howling and barking and grunting about was his demand to play a video. And they've got these things called rules in the House there in the Judiciary Committee. And if you want to play a video, you got to give 48 hours notice so the other side can respond to it or plan a response if they wish. And we know, because he's always got his jacket off, even though there's a rule about wearing jackets, that Jim Jacket Off Jordan is not much for rules. And he had him a video that he did not provide 48 hours notice of to anybody. And so the vice chair of House Judiciary, Madeline Dean of PA, said, you know, I object. We've had no notice. There was no 48-hour notice as is provided for in the rules. And the chair, Gerald Nadler of New York, said, objection sustained. The video's out of order. And then he went, you know, barking mad. And he had to lump it. Oh, well. And House Judiciary is, of course, a kind of a rogues gallery where the Republican side is concerned. It's almost like they intentionally put their biggest wackadoodles on the committee, because it includes, of course, Jim Jacket Off Jordan and Matt, It Only Gates Worse. And Matt Gaetz, well, Jim Jacket Off Jordan had jurisdiction over the Attorney General calling good, God-fearing, hard-working American parents terrorists. Matt Gaetz, who thinks he is more intelligent than he actually is, you might recall the note from, statement that Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland made yesterday, I think it was, where he said, well, I know you went to law school because you went to the very fine law school of William and Mary. And the unstated part of that was, and I still haven't figured out how you got in. Well, Daddy bought his way in. That's how Matt It Gates Better has gaten everything. Or It Gates Worse has gaten everything. So it was time for a little bit of political theater and some histrionics. And along the way, courtesy of the Attorney General of the United States, a civics lesson. I'm only a bill.
It's back, Mr. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very concerned about the influence of lobbyists in Washington, D.C. There's no prohibition against the Department of Justice hiring lobbyists to be prosecutors, is there?
Lobbyists. He's concerned about lobbyists. His entire legal problems stem from his hanging out with, oh, never mind, who liked underage little girls for sex.
You mean former lobbyists, I hope.
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, there's no prohibition.
And can you describe for us the specific vetting that the department does when professional influence peddlers are hired and given prosecuting authorities?
Well, the hiring of assistant U.S. attorneys is a career hire made in the different U.S. attorneys' offices.
In Washington at DOJ, are there any special procedures that vet lobbying contracts or maybe who a lobbyist worked for before they're given prosecutorial authority?
So again, I'm not sure what kind of person you're speaking with. If you're talking about line prosecutors, there is a background check. Everybody, I'm sure here is familiar with the SF-86, has to be filled out, includes all the people that you work for. The same is true in Maine Justice.
But there's no special review for lobbyists as opposed to people who've been engineers or had any other career.
I don't know, but I don't believe there's a difference, but obviously lobbying may
raise conflicts. Let's ask about political consultants. Political consultants are people who get paid to ensure that a candidate wins or loses an election, that a political movement is successful or unsuccessful. Is there any prohibition against hiring political consultants as prosecutors at the department?
Again, I don't think that we're allowed to even look at people's politics. The question.
No. It's not their politics. It's the profession of being a political consultant. There's no special vetting for them.
I don't think that there's a specific.
You know, that term, political consultant, that's kind of a shortcut. I mean, okay, sure. James Carville, political consultant. Turd Blossom, Karl Rove, political consultant. But it's not really something that, well, he's obviously got some, he thinks he's got a gotcha question in there somewhere because, Matt, it only gets worse. He thinks he's Perry Mason.
Prohibition. There is a requirement that once somebody becomes a prosecutor, just like when somebody becomes a judge, that they get rid of whatever preconceptions they had before and that they go forward under their new responsibilities and are subject to the ethics rules of their new.
We would hope that would be the case, Mr. Attorney General, but I tend to think that if people are in the influence peddling game or they're prosecutors.
Oh, the influence peddling game. Oh, that's a. Hey, that's a real live one there. That's what that is, the influence peddling game. Yeah. Because, of course, you know, pot. Hi, this is Matt Kettle Gates. Influence peddling. Sounds like a real Southern populist there, doesn't it? My God, the influence. He's a veritable Matlock in pancake makeup.
It can be kind of dangerous to mix those, to be an influence peddler for hire one day, to be a prosecutor the next, maybe to rotate back and forth among those careers. And it sounds like there's no special vetting for lobbyists or political consultants. Let me ask the question about partisan committee staff. We have partisan committee staff that you see here. Their job is to ensure that one party or another preserves or, captures the majority, that legislative proposals are successful or not successful. No prohibition against the department hiring partisan committee staff as prosecutors, is there?
As I understand it, every administration, including the one preceding this one, has hired people who have been committee staff.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a statutory limitation. If the House of Representatives and the Senate think that partisan, or I'm not sure what.
That's how Preparara got his job. He worked for Schumer, and then he ended up in the Southern District. So we have people who.
Aha! The game's afoot, Holmes. Watson, whomever the fuck. The game's afoot. Preparara. Because Preparara has not made any bones about. The fact that he thinks that the previous 4 years maladministration was basically a criminal enterprise. And he only thinks that because it was.
Can be lobbyists and then prosecutors. We have people who can be political consultants and then prosecutors. We have people who can be partisan committee staff and then prosecutors. The public integrity section has jurisdiction over election integrity, correct?
It has jurisdiction over election crimes, yes.
Yes. So is there any prohibition against people who've been lobbyists, partisan committee staff, or political consultants actually going in and serving in the public?
I get the idea that as meek and mild-mannered as Merrick Garland is, he might be getting to the end of his ability to deal with this garbage.
Integrity section? Or is that allowed?
Just say again, the hiring in the public integrity section is a career hire made under the civil service. It's not made.
I know, I'm worried about their prior career, though. See, what I think is that if someone has been a political operative to
the... Now, see, this is more that deviltry with language. This is twice he said, I think. And we all know that Matt It Gates Worse is incapable of engaging in that concept we know as thinking. What he's saying here is he believes, because there's not a shred of anything to suggest that he's in the right about anything that he's ostensibly asking about. There's no thinking going on.
But then put them in charge of election crimes. It's kind of like having the fox guard the hen house, don't you think?
Oh, if you think that, that would be a perfect example of something the House should pass a statute barring people from particular professions from working in the Justice Department.
And would you support that legislation?
I'd have to look at what it is, and I have to look at whether it itself violates the First Amendment. But I don't think there have ever been any restrictions like that before.
I appreciate your open-mindedness, and I hope that persists during your time at the department. Would you provide the committee a list of lobbyists, former lobbyists, or just former political consultants who work in the public integrity section so that we might inform on the legislation that you've suggested we might consider?
I don't intend to create a list of career officials and what their previous jobs were.
So if there are people who literally were political operatives who have prosecuting authority...
So basically... He wants, to be clear, Matt It Gates Worse wants Merrick Garland to write Matt Gaetz's enemies list for him. Jesus, even Richard Nixon wrote his own enemies list, or, you know, one of the thugs in his office, Haldeman, Dean, Ehrlichman, Liddy. God almighty. This guy's a real Lulu. And He's pretty brassy, really, when it comes right down to it, because the investigation is still ongoing. But that, see, he's also probably setting up a defense.
Well, they came after me because I was going after political corruption in the Department of Justice.
No, dumbass, they came after you because you used Venmo and made a public payment on Venmo. For sex. With an underage little girl. Ugh. I know. Bless his heart, Merrick Garland is all meek and mild. Remember, asks Ron in Raleigh, remember when Barack Obama asked for help choosing a SCOTUS nominee? He went to Orrin Hatch of Utah. And Orrin Hatch suggested that Merrick No Guts Garland was acceptable. So that's who Barack put forth for a seat on an associate justice seat on the Supreme Court. And it, of course, had the expected result. Attorney General Garland is a member of that august organization, the Federalist Society. I guess no justice, no justice, to paraphrase. I don't want to be that way, but it is getting frustrating. This administration, any administration is only 4 years long. And it takes long enough just to get confirmed and then get in the office and get up to speed. And it feels really worrisome that these dumb bastards are going to get away from it. Yeah, I know. Tracy says, this is nauseating. Jesus, to be a white man in America. Privilege runs broad and deep. It does. It absolutely does. I know, Tracy. I know. On and on and on. Creeps each day in its petty pace. Oh, and just a quick update to the Princess of Arizona story from last night that we talked about. You know, our little nut Megan McCain. You know, she's John McCain's daughter. Just ask her, she'll tell you. You can almost hear it when she's calling her kids down to breakfast. Kids, wake up! I'm John McCain's daughter. It's time for breakfast. But you'll recall that in the interview that she gave, she said, "Well, you know, the atmosphere at the View was just so toxic." Because she's written a memoir, and the suits at ABC are pissed. And TMZ got some inside skinny, some, you know, the gossip. Writing, "We're told there are many points of dissent. For instance, ABC execs say the notion Meghan left on her own volition is wrong, and ditto for her claim everybody except her was oozing toxicity. Our sources tell us Meghan was essentially forced out of her role after an internal investigation into the environment she describes, which we're told was in fact real, but mostly due to Meghan's behavior on and off camera, not her co-workers. Other way around." And I guess Kim Goodwin, the head over at ABC, investigated Nutmeg's claims, and the report says she met with everyone connected to the show, talent and staff, and over and over and over again, there was consistency in pointing out that the reason there was infighting on the set was Meghan McCain. It went so far that there was an emergency Zoom meeting that Kim Godwin held to try to deal with it. And the only reason she wasn't fired sooner by a fellow named James Goldston was because, and Stephen New York will probably hoot like a barn owl, they were afraid of conservative backlash for getting rid of little Nutmeg. Meanwhile, the atmosphere there at the show, and I realize this is not exactly earth-shattering, but it's kind of interesting to see how right-wingers bring toxicity wherever they go. The atmosphere of the show is dramatically better. It's just a nicer place to be now. Only in America, Matt in San Francisco says, "Only in America can a pedophile grill the Attorney General with a holier-than-thou attitude." Oh, I know. I know. I know. As to her memoir, Tracy asks, "What? Did Nutmeg write it in crayon?" Yeah, the flesh-colored one, Tracy. I think the title was "I'm John McCain's Daughter, Princess of Arizona." Yeah. And I mentioned that brief bit of madness from Nitwit Nero this morning.
"The insurrection took place on November 3rd, Election Day. January 6th was the protest."
And bless his heart, the never-Trump Republican, former member of the House of Representatives, Joe Walsh. Not the cool Joe Walsh. Not the life's been good to me so far, Joe Walsh. But he did kind of nail it. He said that what Nero said,
"The protest was January 6th, the insurrection was November 3rd.
Is an act of war against America. Any, and he used all caps, any Republican who does not publicly rebuke this statement must be defeated. Any Republican." And of course, there is a group out there now headed up by the guy who wrote the anonymous memo about people deliberately trying to keep Nitwit Nero from completely losing his shit, in conjunction with former New Jersey governor and not exactly a stellar career at the Environmental Protection Agency, Christine Todd Whitman. They have formed a group, and they are raising money for all they're worth. And the purpose of the money they are raising is to support Democrats running against maggots. So maybe they will pump some money into the campaign coffers of whomever it is that's going to be running against Jim Jacket Off Jordan. Maybe. We can hope in one hand, etc. Stephen New York's McCain. I thought everyone hated John McCain and his daughter anyway now. Wait, didn't you know John McCain is a hero of the Republic? I mean, he did, like Colin Powell, get slimed by Nitwit Nero. Jamie Dupree tweeted today in regard to Nitwit Nero's statement. In debate on the January 6th investigation today on the House floor, Democrats are repeatedly bringing up Nitwit Nero's new statement and demanding that Republicans disavow it. They won't. They live in fear of him. I know we're not supposed to make these kind of comparisons, but if you've ever seen the film version, Untergang, Downfall is my favorite. The little guy with the little genocidalist mass murderer who started a world war, with the Charlie Chaplin mustache. He was just an avid anti-smoker. Hated cigarette smoking. Lived a clean, healthy life, ate a limited diet. But he hated smoking. And there's that one scene after he's eaten the barrel of his Luger. And I guess while people were pouring the gasoline on his corpse, where people who worked around him in the bunker begin to reach into their pockets. And I think William Manchester describes it as well in the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. People begin reaching in their pockets and pulling out their cigarettes. And smoking, something that they had been otherwise forbidden to do for years. Of course, it made the bunker smell like cigarette smoke, and they were forever getting it. Never mind. But this is the point is this: Republicans will not disavow him. They will not say that it was a dangerously un-American statement, that it was treasonous, traitorous, that it is in fact an incitement to another insurrection. They won't do that. At least until he's dead. And he is in his twilight years, but he is still, you know, there's an old, I don't know, maybe I know about it because I live here. Maybe it obtains elsewhere. But let's say Granny finds a copperhead slithering through the grass. And you don't know fury until you've seen a granny with her garden hoe go after a copperhead. Grannies are fierce. And she'll and you know, she likes to keep a nice edge on her hoe, because the hoe is for, you know, getting weeds out from around your corn and your tomatoes and whatnot in the garden. And she'll take that hoe and she'll lop the head off of that copperhead. But the saying here in these parts, and she'll pick it up, you know, with the blade of the hoe and lay it out on the sidewalk. And walk away. But the wisdom here is that that snake will not die all the way dead until the sun sets on it. Then I've tested the theory. Stand a ways back, poke at the headless snake, and it'll still twitch, even without its head. And there's still venom in its fangs. And I would submit that every Republican knows this to be true. And so it doesn't matter how many times Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, head of the Rules Committee, it does not matter how many times he calls on Republicans to disavow a filthy statement like that from Trump today. They aren't gonna. Like the clip we had in yesterday's program, where Matt Gaetz could not say that Joe Biden won the presidential election of 2020. I acknowledge that he's president. And then blathers on about mail-in ballots. The same kind of mail-in ballot that Nitwit Nero himself voted by, and Matt, it just Gaetz worse, himself may have voted by. So, don't look for that to happen anytime soon. And you know why he put that statement out? Because he knows. He knows all the way down to his filthy yellowed toenails. Y'all, they're gonna do it again. And oddly enough, of all things, the vaccine is the vehicle for some of this. The damnedest thing. A little something from action in the West Virginia legislature today, because we're having a special session. So the Republicans can gerrymander the state. I actually have one of the few remaining Democratic senators in the state of West Virginia, a guy by the name of Stephen Baldwin. He's from Greenbrier County. He's the state Senate minority leader. And he issued a statement regarding something called HB 335, relating to COVID-19 immunizations and requirements for employment in the public and private sectors. What a weird vehicle for an insurrection, but here it is. On the Senate floor Tuesday, West Virginia Senate President Craig Blair, Republican of Berkeley, maggot, compared COVID mitigation efforts in our state to Nazi Germany. I'm deeply disturbed, says Senator Baldwin, that our healthcare professionals, local government leaders, and business owners attempting to save lives in the midst of an ongoing pandemic are being compared to evil humans who committed the worst atrocities in the world's history. More than 4,000 West Virginians have died during COVID so far, and millions died during the Holocaust. Each life deserves the dignity of being treated with respect, not trivialized politically. Our medical and public health professionals take an oath to protect the lives of their patients and neighbors. They stand firmly united behind proven COVID mitigation strategies such as vaccines, masks in crowded indoor spaces, and personal hygiene. They are heroes who have saved countless lives over the past 19 months. To compare their recommendations to those of Nazi Germany is absurd and profoundly dangerous. The majority of the state's business organizations joined this week with hospitals, doctors, and public health professionals to oppose mandates on businesses forbidding COVID mitigation strategies. In addition, our three Senate colleagues, who are physicians with decades of experience who have been treating COVID patients and signing death certificates, strongly encouraged us to allow hospitals and businesses to make the best decisions for themselves. I was proud to stand with them. I'm deeply disappointed in the West Virginia Senate for failing to support our businesses and health professionals. This pandemic is no time to play politics and spread disinformation. What we saw on the Senate floor today was nothing but political grandstanding on a poorly drafted bill which doesn't do what it pretends to do. In order to get through this pandemic, we need to listen to the experts, enact their guidance, and then we will get back to life as normal. Yeah. But again, this is a vehicle for their insurrection. All you have to do is go over to that subreddit, Herman Cain Award, and it's right there. They can't resist Nazi imagery to describe the simple effort to stop a pandemic that has killed almost 750,000 Americans in less than 2 years. They are bloody-minded and they are on the move. What did Hunter S. Thompson say, Dr. Thompson? The hogs are in the tunnel, and they will travel on a road of bones. He thought he knew what he was writing about, Dr. Thompson did, when he said that. But he was more prophetic than he knew. These maggots, this GOP, is traveling on a road of bones comprised of more human beings than died in the Second World War, than died in the Civil War, than died in the Revolution, the War of 1812, the Spanish-American War, the First World War, Vietnam, Iraq, and they were happy to let it happen. Remember when Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor of Texas, said, we need our seniors to die for the economy? Because he did. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he did. Stephen, New York, Whitman and Walsh. So let me get this straight. Two Republicans are raising money to help Democrats. Remember our discussions about Republicans being so much better at politics? Any questions now? Well, hopefully they'll be successful. Darlene in Connecticut says, and Trump said,
you knew damn well I was a snake before you took me in.
But the maggots, I mean, yes. But the maggots, they don't see him as a snake. They see him as their God. And there's some disturbing parallels and imageries and analogies and metaphors to be made out of that, Darlene. But you're right. You knew damned well I was a snake before you took me in. Meanwhile, a little more spiritual guidance from our dear sister Jude. She said, I feel the need to clarify on Dr. Seuss's sageness. When he references being who we are, may I offer one sentence of his, and because those who mind don't matter. This is not to be misconstrued. This serious precipice we find ourselves standing on requires focus, and in that it is not to negate the minds that are offended. Yet we are only allowed so many seconds of each day, and being awake to this requires decisions on where to place our personal energy. If an issue or concern doesn't bring forth the essence of clarity of how to engage or not to, we run the chance of missing the alignment with those who walk is also ours.
These vessels of ours are truly majestic, and decisions of actions within us are all we have control over. When in doubt, lift upwards and outwards. Indeed, Jude. Indeed. And thank you. And so I guess we're kind of done. At least for this effort. And tomorrow we will celebrate the Horn's Horniversary. 16 years. We will do it with a, oh goodness me, where were we? $1,359 fundraising hole. God, I hope we can knock it down so that there will be a horn for us to have when we come back. Thank you. Thank you to our all volunteer, or thank you to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this program, this long-running conversation, in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, Head on .live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Enjoy your new mowing experience, Farmer John. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives, pretty please, and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe, everybody. Get your booster. Jude got hers. Yay! And Jude sends a shout-out to Darlene, says it's been far too long since hearing her voice. I agree. Get your vaccine, get your booster, wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Take it with you everywhere you go. Don't count on somebody else to provide it for you. Keep your social distance 15 to 20 feet, according to Paul from Parts Unknown. Wear your mask. Get as good a mask as you can have. Don't be cavalier about it. And, of course, if somebody comes towards you burbling about, you know what, I was just like Martin Luther King Jr. the day that I attacked the cat, that I told people to go out and kill Republican rhinos and Democrats and tech executives. Avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.